The president announces his Supreme Court pick. Curtis Hill remains defiant. That, plus new Senate ads and polls, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July the 13th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the president announced his nomination for the open seat on the U.S. Supreme Court, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, and the political battle began.
President Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court has many eyes turning to Indiana. Democratic incumbent Joe Donnelly is a key vote in the Senate. Donnelly's statement says only that he'll carefully review Kavanaugh's record and qualifications. Republican Senator Todd Young is more direct. He praises Kavanaugh as a, quote, originalist. Young won't say whether he wants the landmark abortion rights case Roe v. Wade overturned, but local women's rights groups say abortion rights and affordable health care are at stake with the nomination. Two groups have ads going up in Indiana to promote Kavanaugh: the Judicial Crisis Network, which ran similar ads in key states for Trump's previous nominee, Neil Gorsuch, and Americans for Prosperity of Indiana, who urged Joe Donnelly to vote for the judge.
Will the ad campaigns have an impact on Joe Donnelly's vote? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwann is the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and University of Indianapolis political scientist Laura Merrifield Wilson. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, will these ads move the needle for Donnelly?
I don't think that the ads are going to impact his decision as much as they keep the issue in the forefront for voters. I mean, I think Senator Donnelly has to vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. I don't think he has any other choice. He cannot be reelected without that. He has zero chance of being reelected if he does not vote to confirm the judge. I mean, he has a great reputation, and Ann's laughing at me already.
And
seriously,
he's at your word.
This is
about
a,
Joe
this
Donald's
is a Republican state.
Cancer.
There's just no other option for him. Ads don't matter.
He has to vote no. I mean, this Kavanaugh is from the radical right. We're replacing a moderate Justice Kennedy with a radical right person who wants to repeal Roe v. Wade, doesn't want to cover pre-existing conditions, thinks gun control or any gun regulation is out of the question. And on top of that, he's the only one of the finalists to go from working to impeach Bill Clinton to publishing an article in a law review saying that no sitting president can be deposed or indicted. Now, do you think that factored into Donald Trump's equation when he selected this individual for that position? I think it's unacceptable. It's absolutely unacceptable. He's trying to protect his own rear end for what he's done before, and he's an unacceptable choice as Justice of the Supreme Court.
We talked on the show before about how if the pick had been Amy Coney Barrett, who's, of course, from Indiana, Notre Dame professor.
Lately
from Indiana, Notre Dame professor, and someone who Joe Donnelly supported in her nomination in the Seventh Circuit, that would really put him in a tight spot. Does Kavanaugh give Donnelly a little more wiggle room here between yes and no?
I think it does. One of the things that's fascinating is if they really wanted to influence Donnelly, you could just pick up the phone and call. Placing these kind of ads, it's a lot more expensive, but it's clearly they're aimed at public opinion. And they're trying to influence voters and getting them to ultimately impact the senator. I think this does give him some wiggle room, but in some ways that may actually be more challenging because he's only a few months away from that re-election bid.
Yeah, the timing of this is rough for all of these Democrats in these tight races, including Manchin and Heitkamp. But these ads going to – if you're Joe Donnelly, what are you paying attention to most when you're trying to make this decision?
I don't think the ads in and of themselves are going to make much difference. I think the professor's actual is right on the money here. He knows where the electorate is, the mood is. He's got numbers that I'm sure he's tracking on a daily basis. He's probably paying more attention, frankly, to those. And let's keep in mind, too, this is not the only race that has spurred commercial advertising. Think about on both sides. Not only are Joe Manchin and Heitkamp and others who are being seen potentially as defecting from their party, the Democratic Party, and voting for the nominee, but you also have other forces, other well-funded groups, which are looking at Senator Murkowski and Senator Collins, trying to wrest them from the Republican
caucus.
And so I guess you could say then if it just were as simple as that, it's just look at the media buys and who has spent the most and who had the best tagline. And I think it's a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Senator Joe Donnelly vote for President Trump's Supreme Court nominee? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should Attorney General Curtis Hill resign in the wake of sexual misconduct allegations against him? 79% say yes, 21% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, speaking of, Attorney General Curtis Hill addressed the media this week for the first time since those sexual misconduct allegations against him became public.
Three legislative staffers and a state lawmaker say Hill groped them at a party in March. Two other women corroborated the accusations. Hill spoke to the media for about 7 minutes this week. He steadfastly denied the allegations.
A week ago today, I had a name, and I want my name back.
Hill blamed the media for what he calls sensationalism and said those who called on him to resign, including Governor Eric Holcomb, should rescind those calls. He also sought to poke holes in his accusers' stories, but he offered no explanation of his own and did not take questions.
And Delaney, if Hill is calling the bluff of those who said he should resign and who have the power to remove him from office, is it a successful strategy?
Oh, I don't think he has anywhere to go. I really don't. I mean, the witnesses against him are very credible. It's not just the four women involved, and we've heard the stories of three of them. There are also other eyewitnesses who saw this, okay? Now, he's taking a page out of Donald Trump's book. He thinks if he can just call the accusers liars, the problem will go away. It won't go away. I mean, you had universal condemnation by Republican elected officials. Even Mike Braun, after being pushed a little bit, finally came on board and said perhaps he should resign when his staff got hold of him after his radio interview. So you have pretty universal feeling about that, and the conduct's unacceptable. It's unacceptable conduct to do that as the highest elected legal official in the state of Indiana. He should resign. He should resign immediately. And if he doesn't resign, there are remedies to taking him out.
Speaking of those, Brian Bosma and David Long, in the statement they sent out now last week, calling on Curtis Hill to resign, mm-hmm. said if we, you know, he's not a legislative employee, but if we could fire him, we would. They can fire him, or at least they are the leadership in a position to do that. What are they waiting for?
Well, for one, we're not in a legislative session. So, you know, I think as the process plays out, timing is interesting. But number one, let me say that I'm really proud and admire these ladies for coming forward and telling their account of what happened. And, I mean, it really hit me hard when I read those letters. Gabrielle's, Nikki's just were really powerful. And I hate that it's 2018 and we still have to put up with things like this. And, you know, I'm super grateful for the Me Too movement. I wish it had happened decades ago, and I'm at least encouraged that I think now people, even folks who hadn't gotten the message, are starting to get the message that hopefully ladies won't have to deal with this in the future. But in terms of what happened, so the Inspector General is going to do the investigation. I think they've decided that is the next best step, and then the legislature can act. But, you know, we won't be in session until January. I think it's unlikely that they would have a special session for this. And so
I
think
reorganization, though.
They do have organization day in November.
Right, but still, that's November. So, I mean, we have a long way to go, and, you know, who knows what other stories will come out. I do think it's, I mean, the Attorney General certainly has the right to defend himself and tell his story, maybe not from the Attorney General's office in terms of resources, but, you know, no one has given any alternate account of what happened that night.
That's true. To that last point, he is defending himself so far, including yesterday his office sent out a press release attacking the latest accuser who came out with a public account of what happened or what she says happened. Is that problematic?
Yeah, it doesn't strike me as a winning strategy. You don't exactly have a deep bench behind you when you look at your army of supporters, which at this point are I don't know how many hands we'd need to count them, but they're few and far between. So that does seem odd. You know, initially one of the concerns that he raised was that when these individuals hadn't necessarily entered into the public discussion in the manner they have now, you know, there's this notion, well, American jurisprudence and just our tradition says I should be able to know who's accusing me of these things. Well, now you have these very eloquent, very articulate, very thoughtful letters that have appeared, accounts by these women. So I don't think going after them is necessarily the case. You know, normally in a situation like this, you'd say this is all about politics. They're out to get me. But you can't do that when the members of your own party, including, you know, your own governor, is saying you need to go. So then your next step, of course, is to fall back to the time-honored tradition of blaming the media. But that sort of wears thin. So I guess the only recourse left is blame the accusers.
At this point, if you're Curtis Hill, is this, I suppose, the only thing you have left to do?
I don't see how this plays out well for him. I really don't. And he's been having his ads on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter. Again, another public appeal, trying to share his side of the story. But when you watch the press conference, he's on the defensive, but it's the most aggressive defensive I've ever seen. and meanwhile, it's tearing the party, where he has so many people that are opposed to him that have already said he should step down. I understand he's clawing to stay in there, but I just don't see how this can play out well on his behalf.
Well, the Senate campaigns of incumbent Joe Donnelly and challenger Mike Braun each released new ads this week, while a new poll suggests Donnelly is trailing.
The Donnelly ad attacks Braun's company, noting the auto parts distributor gets many of those parts from overseas.
He uses foreign workers in Mexico, Taiwan, all across China. In a debate, Braun tried to hide it.
I don't know where they get them made. We distribute them.
Braun's new ad goes on the attack, too, noting Donnelly's family company outsourced jobs.
Senator Donnelly's manufacturing company outsourced Hoosier jobs to Mexico so they could pay less than a dollar an hour.
Meanwhile, a new Axios SurveyMonkey poll shows Braun 2 points ahead of Donnelly.
Laura, is this the first time, this is the first time we've seen Braun sort of on the front foot attacking Donnelly in one of his ads since the primary election?
Attacking Donnelly's family. Okay, an important distinction.
Yes, but attacking Joe Donnelly, whether you agree with the attack or not, is different. But are you surprised, though, to see him on the attack this early?
I'm not surprised at all. I think this is a much different race relative to what Donnelly had in 2012. Braun's obviously a much different candidate than Murdoch. And I think Braun came out of a really contentious primary for the Republicans. He's been fighting the entire time. It makes sense to me that he would come out swinging, whereas Donnelly's had the benefit of being able to wait. He won unanimously the Democratic primary, and so he's coming into it in that way. I'm not surprised at all. I can imagine it's going to get more aggressive.
I don't think it'll stop. We've talked before about how so far Braun's ads seem to be kind of a response to what Donnelly has been throwing at him. This, again, is sort of that. Again, he goes to the front foot. But do you feel, if you're Mike Braun, do you feel like you're still just trying to get the messaging more back to you? Like, have you lost the message a little bit?
Well, maybe to a certain extent, as was noted. I mean, he had a primary that was atypical, and that forced him to attack very much to the right and to carve out a position and a niche that worked with voters in the primary that might not necessarily be the message he wants to spread more widely across the state. So he's had to retool a bit. And I think any time you're the challenger, you tend to focus more on the incumbent's record in terms of assessing what I would do differently or where this person failed. So I guess that doesn't surprise me. The notion is it early. Maybe if we were sitting in 1958 and the rules were
the campaign doesn't start till Labor Day.
Now I don't. Is there ever too early? I think it's you know, in the U.S. Senate, it's a 6-year proposition to a large extent. As soon as the whoever takes office, I'm sure that the opponents will start chipping away at the reputation.
I don't want to pretend like Joe. I mean, Donnelly's had negative ads out too, so yes. This is started early or not on both sides. Is this helping either one of them at this point?
Well, so the Democrats started running ads against Mike Braun the day after the election, so those started immediately. And, you know, the Braun campaign has to kind of reintroduce themselves to the general electorate And so he's been running ads talking about his business, which is obviously a core part of his messaging and a core part of the Democrats' messaging. So he's going to have to continue to make that case. So I don't think that's surprising. I don't think it's surprising that Braun's running ads against Senator Donnelly. Like, that's what we're going to see. The one thing I'd say is, if this is the only message that the Democrats have against Mike Braun, like, it's over. They can't win without something else, because this is a message that he's already answered, and I just don't see how it grows unless they've got something else.
He hasn't answered it. I mean, he exploits his workers. He imports and outsources the same thing he's accusing. It's important to say Joe Donnelly's family of doing, not Joe Donnelly, but Joe Donnelly's family. So if the family is
Joe Donnelly's family is
now part of the campaign, it seems to me Mike Braun's is too. And maybe we ought to talk about his brother, who ran in the 4th District denigrating an American who lost a limb in the Vietnam War and making fun of that. Maybe that's fair game in the Senate campaign as well, since the families have been introduced. Mike Braun can't defend his work record. He's been cited by the government. He kicked people with heart attacks off health insurance. He's been cited any number of times and fined. And that's the record that he wants to take to the U.S. Senate. But that's not the only issue. He also wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act and take away coverage for pre-existing conditions. He also wants to repeal Roe v. Wade. He also doesn't believe in any kind of gun control.
We haven't seen a lot of that yet. So,
but you will, because that's his position. He is a trumpet, first, last, and always. In fact, he will wreck. He's not a check and balance on the president. He is a rubber stamp. That is clear.
We'll see. Voters don't want that, though. The state closed the books on its 2018 fiscal year this week, and Indiana's on a bit of a streak, three consecutive years in which it collected less from corporations than the previous year.
Indiana collected $318 million less from corporations this year than last year. And while 2018 marks the third straight year corporate tax collections went down, it's also the seventh consecutive year Indiana cut the corporate tax rate, the third largest source of state revenue. State officials say that's no cause for concern and call the corporate tax volatile. Indiana will continue to cut the corporate tax rate for another 3 years. The state finished its fiscal year with nearly $1.8 billion in reserve, which officials say helps ensure the state will have financial flexibility in any future economic downturn.
John Chuanis, this is something the Democrats have been preaching for a while now. At what point do Hoosiers, though, ask why the state continues to cut the corporate tax rate?
Well, I think a solid economy, and again, I'm not saying everybody's benefiting in this economy, but it's generally across the board been fairly robust, and we're near virtually full employment. That has a way of sort of being a lubricant, political lubricant, against sort of squeaky parts that might otherwise criticize the decisions that have been made by the General Assembly. So I think what has to change is there to be an economic downturn and people start to feel the pinch, or we see lawmakers considering a broader tax hike than was. There have been tax hikes now, but those were
very
narrowly
targeted
for road repairs, infrastructure.
45 of them.
And it doesn't matter how many, but I don't think people perceived that that was a general increase on the population, the tax-paying public of Indiana. If you saw that the base percentage or the base rate go up, that's when people...
That does seem unlikely.
Right. So let's go with my first answer, which is an economic downturn, which seems more likely.
Yeah, is that really Democrats, for instance, when the conversations about DCS have come up and the funding needs there, they've said, well, why don't we just stop cutting the corporate tax rate, and that'll save us however much money. Part of the argument, though, for the corporate tax cut was it'll actually end up going up because more companies will come in, and so we'll have more, and that's not what's happening. So at any point, do Republicans start to lose the messaging war on those corporate cuts?
I think it could happen, but to echo John's sentiment, the fact that the economy is good, and I think a lot of people don't pay attention to this. If they're doing well, it's their own personal pocketbook. If they feel like everything's fine, until that happens and people pay more attention, I don't think there'd be any pressure on the party or even on the politicians to make that policy change. I really don't see that occurring.
Yeah. Is that the sort of thing that would take?
Well, the thing about this that's so ironic is that the federal tax on corporations was cut from 34% to 22%. We had a chance to bring in $180 million by not changing
over
the code
years.
This yes
yeah.
over to conform with the federal statute.
Right.
We didn't do that. We gave them another $180 million. Mike Pence's program has always been to have Indiana have the lowest taxes. That was his goal. He wants a sign on every highway saying Indiana has the lowest taxes. Okay, you get what you pay for. DCS and child protection, schools, higher education, roads, bridges, God forbid, mass transit. All of those things take state tax dollars, and we're not putting any money in them, which is why, in terms of quality of life, we're 48th out of the 50 states. 48th out of the 50 states. You get what you pay for. And cutting the corporate taxes the way we've cut them and raising 45 other fees and taxes to make up part of this means we're all paying more, okay, and they're paying less and less and less and less. And there's not going to be sufficient revenue to do the roads, to protect our kids, to educate our children through college. And that's the price we're paying.
They've been pouring a lot of money into roads and a lot of money recently into DCS. They've moved around from other funds and made works that they didn't have to make cuts somewhere. But we're also coming up to a new budget cycle, and everybody kind of agrees that there's going to be more money for DCS needed here.
Right.
Is it going to be harder to make the case that, well, let's keep the pocketbooks tight so we can pay for DCS when you're also going to continue to cut the corporate rate for another 3 years?
No, I don't think so. I mean, number one, the kind of strongest indicator of the health of the Hoosier economy is looking at individual income tax revenue and sales tax revenue. And a few years ago, we made a strategic decision to cut the corporate tax rate and that it would help ignite growth in other areas. And so you have companies coming to town, you have companies expanding, people are hiring more people, people have jobs, and they're spending more money. And so over the last 4 years, we've seen the individual income tax revenue and sales tax revenue meet or exceed previous years. The last 2 years, they both exceeded previous years.
Yeah.
And so I think that that shows it's working. And over time, that plays out. On the corporate tax, it's the more variable source of revenue. And companies can shift and change the way they're doing it and get refunds, which we've seen.
Yeah.
And we can't control that. So it makes more sense to have less reliance on
the
corporate
tax revenue. When we were promised that the corporate revenue would go up because of that, they lied to us, is what you're saying.
Well, we couldn't predict what kinds of refunds would
be
happening.
They promised the revenue would go up.
Let me just ask this, John, very quickly. The answer that the administration gave on at what point do we ask why this will continue to go down was, well, people should just be happy that we're not relying too much on that tax. Do they at least need to find a better answer than that?
I think a better answer would be, that's like saying that our gaming tax revenue, it's kind of unpredictable too, but watch it go away and watch how people squeal. You don't want to say that about any leg of the stool or it's going to collapse.
The Indiana Debate Commission announced it will have two debates in the Senate campaign, both broadcast on C-SPAN national television.
Incumbent Democrat Joe Donnelly will square off with Republican Mike Braun and Libertarian Lucy Brenton in two debates later this year. But Braun says Donnelly is ducking his opponents. Braun says he wants three debates, but the Donnelly camp would only agree to two. Donnelly's campaign says the Democrat looks forward to defending his record and that his service in the Senate will keep him out of the state a lot before the election, particularly after Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell canceled the August recess. Libertarian Lucy Brenton says anything less than an enthusiastic yes from Donnelly is evidence he's ducking, and she says he should be afraid to answer questions about what she calls his, quote, less than liberty-loving record.
Jennifer Hollowell, two debates is pretty standard for a Senate race here in Indiana. Is this really a big issue?
Well, I certainly don't blame the Braun campaign for taking advantage of this opportunity and also staking out that Mike Braun is not afraid to debate Senator Donnelly. You know, at the end of the day, whether it's two or three, we're just, I guess, reducing the risk on either side.
Yeah.
But, Senator Donnelly has a lot more experience debating, so I think that the...
He's a lot better at it, too.
This
is a non-issue. This is a non-issue. It really is. I mean, he's the incumbent senator, and he's agreed to meet this guy twice, and really that's more than Braun should be able to ask for.
I'm sure the blue work shirt is out of the closet and ironed and ready to go.
Yeah,
starch collar and all.
All right, well,
finally,
Indianapolis's Church of Cannabis lost its court case this week as a judge ruled the nascent religious institution can't use marijuana as a sacrament. Attorney General Curtis Hill celebrated the ruling, while the church's Grand Poobah, I'm not making that up, that's his title, Grand Poobah Bill Levin, shot back that cannabis is safer than Curtis Hill. And Delaney, did Levin hit a high with that comeback?
That was a great quote. It really was. He deserves a high five for that.
He deserves the high five. Is this a win for the state of Indiana or a loss for the members of the Church of Cannabis?
I think it's a loss for those members, and I'd like to pass on it.
I didn't see everybody jumping forward to answer that question.
Yeah, so. That's one that nobody's going to take a leap on, I guess. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Laura Merrifield Wilson of the University of Indianapolis. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.